asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The Court of Arbitration for Sport has cleared 28 of 43 Russian athletes of all doping sanctions and ordered their medals to be returned after finding there was insufficient evidence against them. Russia's welcomed the ruling and it could pave the way for athletes to compete in the upcoming Winter Games. Dan Ashby reports from Moscow.
The Court of Arbitration has upheld the appeals of 28 Russian Winter Olympians. So that means that they will have their medals returned, they will have their lifetime ban ended, the sanctions against them ended, and they will be able to compete in the upcoming Winter Olympics. 11 athletes, though, were found to have committed a doping violation, so they will not be competing in the upcoming Winter Olympics, but they will have their lifetime ban removed. There has been jubilant reaction in Russia. The sports minister says that justice has been served.
Top Democrat on the US House Intelligence Committee claims Republicans tampered with a memo about allegations of FBI surveillance during the 2016 election. Adam Schiff says it was altered after it had been voted on. It's thought to claim the FBI abused surveillance powers in targeting the Trump campaign. President Trump could approve its publication later. The German parliament's voted to extend restrictions on refugees bringing their families to join them. The controversial issue's been key in ongoing coalition negotiations. Iris Spitzer reports from Berlin.
The compromise that the leading two parties here have worked out is likely to leave a lot of people unsatisfied. Many refugees will continue to be unable to bring family members over at least until the end of July. After that, the total number of family members will be restricted to 1,000 a month. That could leave some refugees waiting as long as 5 years to be reunited with their families.
English Premier League club West Ham have suspended their head of recruitment amid claims he told agents the club didn't want any more African players. An investigation has been launched into comments allegedly made by Tony Henry, including that he said African players cause mayhem when not in the team. From London, Catherine Drew.
West Ham United have confirmed that Director of Player Recruitment Tony Henry has been suspended to allow for a thorough investigation. It comes as the Daily Mail newspaper reports that Henry said in an email exchange with an agent that the club wanted to limit the number of African players in the team because of what he called their bad attitude and commented that they cause mayhem when they are not in the team. The newspaper said Henry suggested this policy had the support of club management and named former striker Diafra Sakho from Senegal as an example of a player that had caused problems. Sakho left West Ham this week to join a French team. In its statement, West Ham said it would not tolerate any form of discrimination and had acted swiftly due to the serious nature of these claims. Catherine Drew, London.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Show, live on richieallen.co.uk, on Fab Radio in Manchester and triggerwarning.tv. Got a very interesting show lined up for you. This Thursday, February 1st, 2018. Let's do it then. Let's get on with it.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Yeah, so most of those Russian athletes weren't cheating at all, eh? Surprise, surprise! Of course they weren't. Propaganda war against Russia just took a couple of backward steps today. Very interesting. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome, welcome. Well, I've got an amazing guest lined up for you this particular show. Richard Allen Miller joins me. He's never been on before. Among his many, many life achievements, and he's got an amazing resume, he's been writing for Nexus magazine, and he wrote an article called The Illusion of Reality. It's brilliant. It's fascinating. Richard has written books on metaphysics and parapsychology and alternative agriculture. He's also had a military and navy background, intelligence. Just extraordinary. I'll tell you more about him before we meet him. Richard Allen Miller joins me for an extended conversation this Thursday, February 1st, as usual. If you'd like to put questions or points to Richard through myself, just tweet at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Alrighty, let's crack on with it then, because there's quite a few things I want to tell you before we introduce Richard, because there's been a lot going on today. A lot of interesting things today have been happening. Now, you will know, particularly if you're in the UK, that a man called Darren Osborne, who drove a van into a crowd of Muslims near a mosque in London, was found guilty of murder and attempted murder today, and he will be sentenced tomorrow morning. He's 48, is Darren Osborne, and he ploughed into people in Finsbury Park in June of last year. He killed a man called Makram Ali, and he injured 9 others. Now, Osborne is from Cardiff, and he was also found, as I just said, guilty of attempted murder. Prosecutors said they were clear throughout that this was a terrorist attack. The jury only took an hour to return their verdict. This was at Woolwich Crown Court today. Sue Hemming from the Crown Prosecution Service said Darren Osborne planned and carried out this attack because of his hatred of Muslims. That's what she said. He must now face the consequences of his actions. And as I was listening to this today, and we covered this story, of course, last year, I was thinking, well, it's all cut and dried, right? The evidence was overwhelming against Darren Osborne. He did it. Nothing to see here. He was taken out of the car. He was held until he was arrested. Bang him up. Right? Cut and dried. Well, have a listen to this from the BBC Home Affairs correspondent Dominic Casciani. I'm going to read you this. Listen. Dominic Casciani writes for the BBC, "In just a few weeks, Darren Osborne went from a troubled, angry and unpredictably violent alcoholic to a killer driven by ideology." We got a problem straight away with the opening stanza of the Casciani report, because the few people who knew Osborne and his girlfriend said he was broody, he was a loner, but angry and unpredictably violent he wasn't, they say. Anyway, he goes on to write, does the BBC Home Affairs correspondent. He writes, "The rapid radicalisation, the way he became fixated on the idea that Muslims in Britain were some kind of nation within a nation, is one of the most shocking parts of this awful crime. The sources of that radicalisation, including his obsession with a television programme about the Rochdale abuse scandal, show how difficult it is to predict who will become a danger to society. Rapid radicalisation. A quiet, loner type guy whose anger accelerated very quickly, and before he knew it, he was driving a van into Muslims." So that was the BBC report on it. Now let's listen to some audio. This is Joe Tidy. Now, Joe Tidy is a Sky News reporter, and he was outside Woolwich Crown Court today and sent this report back to Central Studio. Listen to what Tidy says.
I think one of the shocking things about this case, that, or horrific though it may be, is how quickly Darren Osborne had gone from what his girlfriend described as a normal man, although a loner and a functioning alcoholic, but how quickly he had gone from being that to the man that carried out the attack. As you saw in the report there, it all started back in May with a programme, the drama on BBC Three called Three Girls. And from that point onwards, he is seen, according to police phone records and internet searches, to have become obsessed with Muslims and searched for things on the far right, for example, reading posts from Tommy Robinson, the EDL founder, and Jada Franson, the deputy leader of Britain First, and researching things like Lee Rigby and suicide attacks in Syria, and reading articles on websites described in court as fake news websites called, for example, InfoWars. And that's one of the things that we've seen from this case, and also we've heard from police, the shock that they have seen in terms of how quickly Darren Osborne went from being what he was to what he ended up being, a convicted terrorist for this attack.
Wow. Wow. So, InfoWars and Tommy Robinson and Jada Franson and other websites Plus, he watched the BBC drama, the docudrama about the grooming gangs. The guy just went nuts and he drove a van into people in Finsbury. So we're being asked to suspend our disbelief all the time, right? Is that being trained out of us? Now, don't think for a minute that I'm saying the guy didn't do it. It appears the guy was driving the van. But why did he do it, of course, is the most important question. Sadly, a man is dead and others are injured. But now, all that's left is why, and that's a hugely important question. So forget whether he did or didn't do it, he did it. But why did he do it? Surely more people are questioning this, and they're not just accepting the stock answer from the authorities. Well, he was a bit of a loner, he had a bit of a chip on his shoulder, kept himself to himself, got really radicalised really, really quickly, and then jumped in a van, and, well, he went on a rampage. This is very timely, at least for listeners to The Richie Allen Show, because Barry Troer, a man of unimpeachable and impeccable credentials, weapons researcher for the Navy, Cold War spy debriefer, was on this programme last night, and you might have heard Barry say to me, Richie, with access to the technology that is being used to target people, 5G and all of that, I could take over your mind, Richie, in 30 hours and do with you whatever I would like. Now, with my mind, it would probably only take an hour and a half, but that's what he said, right? Barry Troer, not only Barry, but others. PhD Catherine Horton, Oxford PhD, who was on this programme twice, being battered by this type of technology. Darren Osborne, nice guy, bit of a loner, moody, liked a few drinks. They could be describing me. No, really, they could be describing me. I don't have many close friends at all. I don't. I keep myself to myself, and I like a few drinks. Sometimes I drink a few more than I should. That's the way of the world. Now, a statement from his partner, Sarah Andrews, was read out in court. She said he seemed brainwashed and totally obsessed. Brainwashed and totally obsessed. She was with Darren Osborne for 20 years. They had 4 children together. She said that he was a loner and he was a functioning alcoholic, but he had an unpredictable temperament. There was no talk of violence, but the BBC put violence into their story. The BBC also writes that Osborne started following Tommy Robinson and others, and this all came together to escalate to the point where he drove at the Finsbury Mosque or in the area and killed a man and injured so many others. Lickety split, job done, end of story, he'll rot in jail, we move on. That's the way it's going to be, whatever I think or whatever you think. Questions are not asked by presenters on national television or national radio. We ask the questions, but we don't get access to the people that mainstream media gets access to. So I can't put these questions to people. Unbelievable. Bit of madness today, just very briefly. The frozen food joint, Birdseye. Do you remember Captain Birdseye with the big grey wavy beard? Captain Birdseye and the captain's table and all of that. They've pulled a fish finger advert from television because of concerns raised by safety campaigners in County Durham. What was the ad? Well, the ad showed a man and a boy jumping into the sea off of a boat or a small yacht, and the voiceover declared, Captain Birdseye loves the simple things like jumping into cold water on a hot day with his grandson. However, a campaign group which was set up after a 14-year-old boy died from cold water shock called the advert inappropriate, and so the Birdseye people decided to amend the ad. Cameron Gosling, heaven help him, died after going swimming in the River Weir in 2015. He was a young lad. It later emerged he hadn't acclimatised to the cold temperature of the water. His mother said she was shocked when she saw the advert. There are so many families and organisations that work on water safety education. It seemed as though Birdseye hadn't done its research before making it. With the greatest respect to the mother, whose name is Fiona, nobody could imagine the depths of despair and grief that she must be feeling. Why should Birdseye go looking around to find out if somebody died from cold water shock? People jump off of boats all the time and go swimming. It's what people do. The fact that Bird's Eye have pulled the ad is madness. It's utter madness. They've taken it off air and they are amending the voiceover to remove references to the temperature of the water. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Right? Ruby Wax, moving on. 15 minutes past the hour. Now, I'm a big fan of Ruby Wax. I've always liked her. And she did a series of television shows in the mid-1990s called Ruby Wax Meets. Brilliant, brilliant presenter, Ruby Wax. Brilliant at going to meet people, living with them for a short time, getting to know them. And people like Charlton Heston, Imelda Marcos, John McEnroe, Liza Minnelli, sport, television, music. But she was brilliant, Ruby Wax, at really getting to the heart of who people were. An amazing woman. Lately, she's been suffering from depression. She sat down with Sky's Kay Burley, and it kills me to say this, but Burley did a half-decent job with her. God forgive me for praising Burley. One of the things Kay Burley did raise with Ruby Wax even was to ask Ruby about her reaction to the Me Too campaign. And a couple of things Ruby Wax said to Burley were very interesting indeed.
I always considered myself, I know this is weird, not a female and not a male. I don't identify with it. And maybe they don't see me as that.
I did a debate on the telly when we were debating whether or not it's gone too far the other way and that actually women should...
I don't know, should.
What do you think?
I think you decide what you should do. I don't know what women should do. I don't know what farmers should do. I know what my vibe is. You know, you defend yourself, you defend your family, you defend your circle, you defend the community. But first understand where you're at, you know, inside, and then start saving the world a little bit. Otherwise, you're always saying... Your anger at men comes out. Your anger at, you know, you start pointing the finger. Figure it out yourself. I don't know, if you were molested, go for it, you know. Tear them down. There's moments where you have to become aggressive. And there's moments that you can get caught in the aggression. And now you start becoming, you know, the terrorized becomes the terrorist. I'm just really into what's going on in here. If I saw a woman and she was being abused, I would defend her to the death.
Of course, yeah. Of course. But there's a difference between that and knee touching, don't you think?
Yes, there is. I touch guys all the time. Mm-hmm. Eventually it's going to backfire on me. But again, if you're tuned in, you know his motive. You know his motive. Yeah. Come on. Either he's, you know, you can feel when he's switched on. Again, it's down to the biology. And you can feel when it's just contact. And contact is really important. Mm-hmm. If you feel he's coming on, then take action.
So it's important to differentiate between the two.
Yeah. But I can't tell all women, yeah, go to court because the guy put his hand on your knee.
Yeah, very good answer that. A woman, of course, will instinctively know when a touch on the knee is a friendly gesture and when it's something more. And when it's something more, a woman need only tell the guy to take his hand off her knee. I thought that was interesting. I thought it was also interesting that she said at the very beginning that she didn't identify as male or female when she was younger. Kind of extraordinary that, but anyway. Interesting to me in any case. Speaking of Me Too, here's the latest progressive madness to come out of the Me Too campaign. This is from a website called Backstage.com, presumably used by actors, actresses, and backstage personnel, lighting, all the usual. Anybody who works in theatre or film. This from Backstage.com. Listen to this. For many actors, sex scenes can be fraught with embarrassment, uncertainty, and the downright unwanted. But intimacy director Eta O'Brien wants to change that. Before industry harassment scandals took hold of headlines everywhere, O'Brien had developed a way of empowering actors and directors to safely choreograph scenes involving nudity and simulated copulation on stage and screen. In the wake of Weinstein, she's been in high demand. O'Brien and her agents, Samantha Dodd and Chris Carey, researched what often goes wrong in on-set sex scenes and are now campaigning with a set of guidelines that inform and protect actors. This is fucking mental. I'm sick of this shit. I genuinely am. Now, this guy, Chris Carey, this agent who's working on this, he spoke with Sky News today And it's very interesting.
What we're proposing is to create a safe system of work and education for the actors and directors as well. So it starts with the producer reading the script, identifying that these scenes are going to happen, and start to put in place all the necessary measures and tell the relevant departments.
How could it be an unsafe situation?
Good
How
question.
Would you describe that?
Well, sometimes actors turn up and they're asked to do things that they weren't expecting. So what we did with the Personal Managers Association, who looks after all the agents, we asked for anecdotal evidence from actors who'd been put in situations that they didn't feel safe. They felt vulnerable. They felt that they were on set with somebody that they didn't know. Things went a little bit too far because there was nobody there to tell them no, or to create and sculpt this scene. And the saddest thing of all was, had these guidelines been in place then and months ago, we've been pushing these for a year, these incidents wouldn't have happened.
Oh, Jesus wept. Did you hear what he said? Actors were put in situations where they didn't feel safe. They felt vulnerable. Isn't that part of acting? Isn't that acting? Jodie Foster, speaking of amazing actresses, Jodie Foster won an Oscar for a film called The Accused. Do you remember that? Kelly McGillis was in it. Kelly McGillis played the lawyer that represented Jodie Foster. And Jodie Foster played a rape victim and was outstanding in the film. Presumably, she went to some very dark places to try and feel the part and understand what the character would have went through. And the rape scene shot in the bar was very harrowing. Isn't that acting? Now, in fairness to the presenter, she asks him the right question next.
I mean, many people watching this will say that this is part and parcel of being an actor. This is what's required of you.
No, it's not. If you look, as your reporter said, I was a stunt performer many years ago. I trained for 4 years to become a part of the British Stunt Register. And when you watch these incredible action scenes, it looks amazingly violent, but they're all very well sculpted and very well rehearsed. Everybody knows what they're doing and where they're going to stand. So there's no reason why these scenes, especially as we've identified from actors, that there is an element of risk to them, of sort of them feeling unsafe, them feeling that they haven't been supported on set. As that's been identified, it should be looked at the same way you would at a stunt or a fight sequence.
Ah! Jesus Christ, when an actress or an actor is in a rape scene and they are the victim, don't you want them to feel unsafe? Oh, I haven't been supported. I'm a snowflake. My hand hasn't been held. This is garbage, this, isn't it? You see, this is never going to end. What if during a sex scene, that isn't a violent sex scene, but it's a sex scene between two impassioned, young, good-looking people. What if the guy gets a stiffy, a boner, excited there? What happens then? To be fair to this Sky News presenter, Sky were on a roll today. She asks him.
But how do you legislate against certain performers being aroused by their performance in this situation? Perhaps, you know, taking it further, there are very many instances where stars marry each other. They go on to form a relationship outside of filming. How do you legislate against that?
We're not talking about that. We can't comment on individual actors and their own relationships. I'm talking about putting into place something where, if these scenes are identified that they're going to happen, that first of all, the actor is made very well aware of what's going to happen on set.
Asking is how you legislate against people being aroused by being in that particular situation.
Brilliant. You never thought you'd hear a question like that on Sky News. Fantastic. How do you legislate for somebody being aroused? Wonderful.
Situation.
I don't think you can legislate against people being aroused. Being aroused is a natural thing. And if it's down to legislation, that's down to the government,
yeah.
Really.
You think Michael Douglas wasn't aroused making those scenes with Sharon Stone and Basic Instinct and Paul Verhoeven and all of that? And listen, I'm not being sexist. I can only speak from a man's point of view. I'm a man who is attracted to, well, a member of the opposite sex, but I'd be lying if I said that, you know, I'm not attracted to members of the opposite sex. Of course you're going to be aroused. What happens then? She claims she's unsafe and you get slapped with a suspension, or you get fired, or there's a court case against you. It's madness, isn't it? It's madness, but we are surrounded by it. Here's some good news. Well, something to make us smile anyway. Mark Littlewood is Director General of the Institute of Economic Affairs, which is a think tank. You've heard of it. Some of the members of this think tank, they're often on Sky and the BBC. Now, the Institute of Economic Affairs has been studying the BBC's coverage of Brexit. In fact, they've been studying it forensically. They've gotten an old fine-tooth comb. And they've gone looking very closely. And they have found, this is brilliant, that, is it six? Yeah, two-thirds of the time when the BBC has covered the European Union and our decision to leave, they feature pro-Remain guests. Two-thirds of the time the BBC is speaking about Brexit, they use pro-EU, pro-Remain guests. Hey, the British Bullshit Corporation caught out, done up like a kipper, by the Institute of Economic Affairs. Here's Mark Littlewood speaking to RT.
I was surprised. My impression has been we looked at these two key flagship programmes. I think we've just seen a clip from one of them on Question Time. That's a television show that goes out on Thursday night with five panellists. And then we also looked at Any Questions, a radio programme that goes out on Friday nights with four panellists. And we actually looked across the board at all the panellists, not just what their stance had been in the EU referendum in 2016, but we looked at gender, which political party they supported, where you would presumably reasonably put them on the left-right spectrum. We looked at a whole host of things. And actually, for, say, gender balance or the representation of ethnic minorities, they seem to get it pretty good, the BBC. And indeed, for party political balance, you had basically the same number of people from the right of the spectrum as from the left of the spectrum. But on the issue of did you support Britain coming out of the European Union, well, you've already stated the figures. It was 68% of these panellists have voted for Remain, as far as we can tell, in the June 2016 referendum, and only 32% for Leave. Now, it is true that we are no longer in a referendum period, and it is true, as the BBC said in the statement they have furnished you with, that it's no longer a binary choice. But the problem is this, although there are now a wide range of choices, do we leave without a deal? Do we stay in with a transitional period? Do we stay in the single market? Do we stay in the customs union? And if so, for how long? Although there are now a wide range of options, really those range of options are subsets of the Remain camp and the Leave camp. So if you have overrepresented the Remain camp, you are likely to be overrepresenting on your programmes people who favour, for example, staying in the single market.
Yes, and that's what they are doing even today. Not only the BBC, if the Institute of Economic Affairs was to take a look at Sky News and Channel 4, it will find the very same. 27 and a half minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. Don't forget, Trigger Warning is live on triggerwarning.tv tonight at 10 p.m. UK time. That's television, by the way, unmissable TV. I'll be back in a minute with my guest, very special guest for this Thursday. You don't want to miss him. He's Dr. Richard Allen Miller, and he'll be with me in a jiffy after these.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Welcome back to the program. It's Well, it's pretty much exactly half past the hour for February 1st, 2018. Looking forward to speaking with my guest today. I really am. I was reading Nexus magazine, which Marcus Allen very kindly sends to me every month. And there's a terrific article in it this month entitled The Illusion of Reality. It's an extraordinarily brilliant read, very thought-provoking and very detailed. And it was written by Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Now, some of our listeners will be very familiar with Richard's work if they're interested in metaphysics and alternative agriculture. He's had an amazing career going back to his time in the Navy intelligence world back in the 1960s. He's written many, many books. He put together SEAL Team 1, by the way. He's written many books, including recent books like Power Tools for the 21st Century and ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis, but he's written many more. And you can find him online at richardallenmiller.com. That's richardallenmiller.com. Had a nice conversation with him earlier today, and I'm really glad that he's given us his time this evening. Let's welcome to the programme Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Richard, welcome to the programme, sir. How are you?
good evening. I guess it's evening here, yeah. I'm going bald.
It's glorious where you are. I was observing just briefly today. It's glorious where you are weather-wise. It might be cold. Here, we've got everything. Sleet, rain, hailstones, and it's miserable old blighty. You mentioned you might want to come to England, Richard. I'd leave it a few months if I were you. Just a few months.
It's always been on my bucket list. It's part of my heritage. I just can't travel because I'm a grumpy old man. I have to sing for my dinner.
you have to, I suppose, the older we get, the less easy it is to put up with our fellow passengers. We don't like being boxed in, right?
Yeah. I would love to see the United Kingdom. I just really, Scotland, especially Findhorn. I'd like to see that. I became familiar with Findhorn when I discovered a book I have in my library titled by R.D.L. Lang. In 1896, he wrote The Secret Commonwealth of Elf, Fawn and Fairy, and that's the first book ever written in parapsychology, presented in the Congress there in England.
And was that a huge influence on your work? I'm going to call you Rick, because in our correspondence you've said Rick, you call yourself Rick, so if that's okay, I'll call you Rick. And I know your legions of readers and your legions of fans refer to you affectionately as Rick, of course. Was that book then your inspiration, or one of your inspirations, to start researching parapsychology and things?
Yeah. It is the first book on that. And there's like Will Smith has just got a brand new movie out called Bright, which illuminates that concept of a secret other world around us that we're not noticing, but is present and ever influencing our behavior and way of being.
Rick, we're starting to see many of these types of films on Netflix and other carriers like Amazon. Why are we seeing television shows dealing with these issues? Why are we seeing so many of them now? It's almost like the producers of these programs know more than they are letting on. What do you think?
Well, from my perspective, I would say that imagination is reality, and that as we create our fantasies of watching movies. We make them real. In other words, we don't have a 3D printer until Star Trek had a replicator.
That's amazing.
The idea gets generated in a group mind and then becomes real.
Now, can I ask you something? This is really interesting because I think I understood that, but I also think you might be going a bit deeper. So, science fiction shows of the 1940s and 50s and 60s, they imagine technology that we don't have or we didn't have at that time. Now, what I understand is that inspired entrepreneurs and it inspired inventors. But you're saying there's something deeper going on, something on a more deeper psychological level than just the scientist being inspired by the Star Trek 3D printers. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Mythic Living, Carl Jung, the idea of metaphor, the idea of a group mind, what we call archetypal consciousness that is within us all. That's why when a person gets a Nobel Prize, they have to share it because he has an original. It was done in other countries in similar fashion. And it's like an awakening within each of us.
Is this a great time to be alive, Rick? Because I ask you this because you've been researching the metaphysical and physics, quantum physics, what we understand and what we don't understand for most of your life. But it almost seems, I'm 42 now, you openly say you're 74, which of course is, I'm not patronizing you at all, is young. You're a young man still. But do you feel this is a great time to be alive? Because learning about what's going on seems to be kind of accelerated at the moment. What do you think?
It's about the moment. That's a good word. We time isn't real. Time has been defined as a duration of consciousness. It's the moment, like an hourglass. You have the past and the future, but really all you have is the moment. And what you're trying to do is take that from the profane into the sacred, where it becomes timeless, a moment. That's why we have two brains. It's like a cavitation process. You have physics and religion. In fact, all of your lodges within the lodges have more inner lodges having to do with personal transformation. And the one I belong to, the Argeum Argentum, Order of the Silver Star, their motto for more than 200 years has been the aim of religion using the method of science. And that's why you have two brains and the duodenum, the place that connects them from one to the other. It's a closed system. It's limited. And science does not have the answers any more than religion does. And I don't know of any law in physics that's lasted longer than 20 years. And, you know, there's no such thing as gravity. The earth sucks. it's a metaphor. Yeah.
This is incredible. When I announced you were coming on today, Lisa, who listens to the program in Boston, is a huge fan of your work, listens to your radio interviews and follows you and buys your books. And Lisa said she's got a teenage daughter in high school. And she said, you know, she sometimes has to watch what she says and keep her mouth shut. But she looks at her girl going to school and she thinks, because the world isn't as we have been taught to believe it is, I know that what my daughter is learning in chemistry and in biology and in physics is not true, but I've got to bite my tongue. And she asks me to ask you, she said, put it to Rick, is it fair to say that everything we are teaching our children about the nature of reality is wrong? Is that fair to say, Rick?
I don't know. I have an issue with education and what's going on in today's processes. you know, I remember in second grade, it was required that you study Latin. And by the way, one doesn't, I had a seafood that would hit me if I ever suggested I wanted to learn something. No. One does not learn, one studies it. And then you make it yours with your own interpretation of it. That's probably why we are such a diverse race of humans as,
Rick,
a species.
Rick, does that mean then, this is great stuff, this, I love this, does that mean that truth is forever an unattainable target, that there is no absolutes in anything, whether it be the physical or the metaphysical world? We get hung up on the truth, but really the truth is something that is always, is infinitely subjective. It's never going to be something that we can isolate and say, this is truth. What do you think?
Well, there is a dynamic quality between truth and untruth. The illusion part is constantly changing, while truth remains steadfastly centered. That's a philosophical question, actually. It's the way Castaneda put it, was that reality was that which cannot be known. It can only be experienced. The Nagual, the Tono knowledge was illusion. In fact, even in the older forms of Kabbalah, would suggest that it's a static place. There's only one place on the Tree of Life where above Christ consciousness or Tipperath, going toward God or Kether, in the middle of the Sea of Karanzin, called Daath, D-A-A-T-H, the missing Sephiroth, which is called knowledge through wisdom. And the two paths on the outer light that go to God are the hermit and the lovers. You either do it androgynously or you do it with a physical representation of the inner feminine part of yourself. And the path that connects and goes through Daath is humor.
Humor? Why humor?
You gotta laugh your way through this one, man.
yeah.
Isn't that an interesting concept?
It's an amazing concept. It's mind-blowing stuff, this. And I'm new to so much. It's one of the reasons I invite people like you on, Rick, because, you know, a lot of our listeners will know about you and they will be reading your books and they will have some grasp or some understanding of it. I don't. I suppose that's what makes for, I suppose, a beautiful experience in terms of an interview, because I don't know anything. And I'm just gobsmacked by this, the great English expression, gobsmacked. My mouth is open.
It's a pleasure, by the way, to be with you. I love your accent. And of course, I've absolutely heard of you, and I'm just deeply honored. Thank you.
Well, I'm very surprised by that, Rick, but thanks for saying that. Not that you like the accent, but that you would have heard of us. I really appreciate that. Now, this is true. One of the things we do not do on this program is we don't make things up. When I said you were coming on, I was bombarded with people who know your work and they love you. And they said, Richie, you better acknowledge, they said, I better acknowledge, me, the presenter, you better acknowledge that Rick was talking about and investigating the holographic universe theory long before many of the men and women who talk about it today. And it's true, Rick, this is a concept that, you know, in the last 15, 20, 25 years, a lot of people I know have come to understand the basic concept, but you were looking at this way back. How did you get into thinking about the nature of reality? Is what we view an illusion? Is it holographic? How did that come into your life, Rick?
That's a good story, okay? I'll bring up that cassette. I worked for Old Man the Pot. That was my first job out of undergraduate school. And I went to Wilmington, and I was walking down the hall in Wilmington at the Experimental Research Station, and I looked in this one door that was open, and I saw a three-dimensional color TV.
Wow.
That was in 1967. And I had an epiphany. I walked in and I met a man called Gabor. He had taken a hologram, what they called a hologram, which was a piece of film, and by sending coherent light through it and next to it, the interference pattern created a three-dimensional image. And he had gotten a Nobel Prize for that. And I had an epiphany, and I realized the hologram could be extended into further dimensions by suggesting it was the way information folded into or out of itself, like a fractal, a Mandelbrot-Julier-May pattern. And then I realized that quantum physics had an indeterminacy quality built within it, that the more using space-time, that the more you knew about one thing, the less you knew about the other. It was going from the analog into the digital concepts of worlds. And that a hologram then represented a different kind of universe based on information, where everything was in a point and then collapsed into or out of itself. And the metaphor that I would use with Navy SEAL was that you had the physical plane. We'll call that IQ. And then we had the Bene Jesuit, the women with EQ, which was the emotional plane, the more information of how you felt about the physical plane. Of course, the next plane up then would have been what Plato might have suggested, a basic form in the distinction between a chair and a couch. And that would be where Bohm came in, with the implied or implicate order of something more implied within the one. Above that, the fourth plane then would have been the archetypal plane, where you are me, and I am you, and I am the walrus.
Right.
There are four more planes above that, by the way. And I use Timothy Leary's neurologic circuits as a metaphor, and now I'm beginning to understand how these neurotransmitters allow us, once you become aware of them, you can play them like you would their music or biofeedback. I started in the 60s training SEALs to use biofeedback to control heart rate, pulse, respiration. These are autonomic functions that are easily controlled with consciousness once you know what to listen for in your body. Today, I'm doing the same thing with neurotransmitters. The chill that goes up your back, dimethyltryptamine. Actually, it's N-dimethyltryptamine. Once you can generate that at will just by thinking about it. And there are things you can do with that, because it turns out that that chill is actually a physical and physical light beam spectrum going up or down the spine, Sri Aurobindo or Gopi Krishna, and that you can focus that, aligning your back correctly, and you can stimulate the pineal gland. Now, what happens next is, if you have the right diet, you can regenerate nerve tissue rather than where we are today and just generating glial cell primitive neurons. And I demonstrated that with scientist Robert O'Becker. He and I did a study, Clinic 7, the University of Washington, where I actually regenerated nerve tissue and refixed a severed perineal. I had a perineal was severed, and I, with a bunch of doctors watching, I demonstrated that you can regenerate nerve tissue. And that was one of the protocols I trained students on, how to use that to chill. Today, I'm going to use that more in a new book I'm writing, The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe, as a model on how to change the movie.
How to change the movie. I'm glad you said this. I'm just going to do a quick update in case anybody has joined. We have people joining. The program is syndicated, of course, on multiple platforms. You are with the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 11 minutes to the top of the hour, live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester here in the UK, on triggerwarning.tv. We're on TuneIn Radio as well, and richieallen.co.uk. Europe's most listened to independent radio show, and we are thrilled that Richard Allen Miller, Dr. Richard Allen Miller, and he's got multiple doctorates, by the way, is live on the line from Oregon in the US. Brilliant article in this month's Nexus magazine, and his books have been incredibly well reviewed over the years. Power Tools for the 21st Century, ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis. There are many more. Go to richardallenmiller.com. That's where you need to go, right? And bookmark his website. This is an extraordinary man, and I'm delighted to be talking about this. Changing the movie. Rick, this is incredible, because when back in the 60s, when you saw that three-dimensional television, and you know it was kind of your eureka moment, how does that change a person emotionally? You know, the realization that what we see is illusory by its nature. It's not real. Because there are two obvious follow-up questions, Rick. Follow-up question one is, well, what the bloody hell am I? Number one, right? And number two, of course, why? And you just touched on the third one, kind of, which is changing the movie. Who or what generates the hologram? Where is it coming from, Rick?
Synchronicity. The idea of having six things in front of you and all of a sudden one leaps out and says, that one's important. Yeah. That's how your future timeline talks to the moment. And if you can integrate that, you change the past. It's a closed system. And as a model, this is the way, as a model for getting closer to self, union with self. That's only halfway to God. The other part probably needs a guide with a helicopter, the movie is illusionary. Like, the brain can be properly seen as an amorphous semiconductor. It's constantly in flux or change. And that means it could be defined as a four-dimensional hologram of five space. That means that if you can go to different places in the brain, you can actually create a different reality. Kind of like, I don't know, what's that movie where they change everything all the time? Five Space. And that is the ability to change what you're observing and what's actually physically happening.
That's incredible. That is amazing. So we could generate our own hologram. We could generate our own existence, another plane.
We already are. Yeah, it's the next stage in our evolution.
Right, here's a question then, Rick. Do you know, right now, life is good. Right now, because I'm presenting a program that I like to present. I enjoy it, and I enjoy speaking to people like you. I'm very lucky to be able to do that. And I'm in good spirits now. But generally, and I'm not somebody who suffers with depression, life is dreadful, Rick. We live in a paradigm, and it's dreadful. It's oppressive. It's murderous. It's psychotic. What is generating that? That's what I'm interested in. What's creating that projection, that hologram, this lunatic asylum that sees people murdered for, you know, nothing, countries bombing other countries, terrorist attacks. Something is generating that illusion. What is, do we have any guess? I know you're a man of science, and I know you like to deal in facts and what you can prove, but if this is being generated from somewhere, what is doing it and why?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure I can properly answer it. It's different for each of us. That's what made us God's favorite, was that we had choice. And, glass half full, or is it half empty? And I have that choice. I choose to see order rather than chaos.
Yeah.
I choose that. Okay, so that means It's a choice. I choose that for myself. It's different for each of us. One could metaphorically say we've been invaded by something. That's not untrue. Even our various Bibles will suggest that there's something else going on here. And I have often wondered what the fourth genome and our blood type's all about, Rhesus negative. Yeah, well, I've been to Antarctica. I've seen the Nazi base. Where's that in our history books? Where is it? They don't teach that in history.
Rick, let's stay with this just for a second. This is great. You've been to Antarctica and you've seen the famed mythical Nazi base. You've actually seen it.
Yes.
What was it?
There was a Viking base I saw from the 14th century.
Wow, Rick.
Where's that in history? I saw that too. And then there was a hall cavern going right down into what we currently believe is plasticity, going more than 100 miles down into the mantle. And at the time I was there, we did not have the technology to go down that hole, but there it is. And I've seen things that I don't understand. I was basically part of A-Team. Whenever the Navy found something that was out of the ordinary, they brought us in. And I caught a lot of flies with my mouth open in disbelief. I've watched Sherpa walk up barefoot up Mount Rainier, white feather shaman. I've watched American Indian walk fire. I've seen that. How did they do that?
How did they do that? Yeah.
Well, apparently, I'm going to suggest that altered states of consciousness are gifts from God, allowing us to go into other universes where the laws are different, as a model, as a way of trying to grasp in the physical world what is actually happening on a multiple level of information.
Not
exactly what we think it is.
No, and I want to come back to that in a minute. Delighted that we're talking.
Fox, man, you're opening.
I'm opening up. My mind is blown, and some things.
But know that you can sense the validity of it just in your gut.
100%. 100%. Yes, and I'm not inclined. I don't want to. I might sound like it. Like I'm kissing your backside. Not at all. I absolutely believe what you're telling me. Now let's stay with Antarctica for a minute, because there is a hive of activity, covert activity, of course. The public don't know about it in Antarctica at the moment. What were the Nazis trying to do there, Rick? What were they trying to discover? What did they want to reach?
Thousand-year war. Who knows? Survive. Continue. Who knows? They were always interested in previous epochs technologies, sciences that we don't have today. How did the pyramids get built? They certainly weren't built with mastodon like in the movie 10,000 BC.
No.
How did that work? Well, you can find in older Bibles the Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Formation, which relates sound to words, and giving a commonality to the technologies of the word. Whirling dervish, you do it with dance, movement, can change space-time. And Science Daily just came out talking about the whirling dervish and how they are restructuring the water in their body. What is structured water? I mean, that is something brand new, and yet it's a technology that has been around for a while.
Rick, could you give the kindergarten definition? Not for my listeners. My listeners are pretty smart, but for me, Rick,
you're getting it all, man.
Yeah,
and you get it your own way. Once you have it,
structured water, though, what is it?
That makes it real.
I don't doubt you. Define as simply as you can to me what structured water means. What is it?
Well, it's H3O2. That is It's hydrogen peroxide with an extra hydrogen atom. And it is what changes or allows the leading edge of a wave to move faster than the wave itself. It is, how am I going to put this? When a drop of water falls into a pool of water, there are several things that happen at the moment of impact. There is the waves that go outward, and then there's the waves that go inward. They slap each other, and they create a little drop of water that goes back up again into the air. But it's not a drop of water anymore. What it is a bubble that has trapped the medium in which it's fallen. And that water, that bubble, is H3O2. And inside that water bubble is air that is cavitating into the out of. It's a torus going a toroid. That's Sir Roger Penrose at Princeton talks about that. Torus twister space.
And what can it do? What can it do, Rick? Does it have, you know, properties? Does it have benefits for mankind?
Well, let's stay tuned on, you know, structured water and...
Structured water.
Buckyball, so, you know, that full range. But what happens is that we now know that most solar systems have a binary. We know that our galaxy has a big black hole. What's at the other end of that black hole? A white hole? We don't know yet, but guess what? The human brain also has a binary system going on with left and right brain. And now we're starting to see that there's something else going on and where our position is in the scheme of things. And this is why Hermes and the old alchemical forms would say, as above, so below. The metaphor of the sun having a binary brown dwarf out there past the Oort cloud. And guess what? Some of its planets are now interfering with our planets. There's a planet out by Saturn right now that Stanford's real interested in where it came from. And here we are at the moment. And actually, when the Hopi talk about the red and blue coutina, it would suggest something going through our solar, a redshift, something going through very quickly, no warning. And it's the moment.
And this is being kept from people, Rick. You just said that there is a planet in our solar system. It's near Saturn. We're not being told about this, obviously.
Well, it's in some news. And Stanford came out and said so. And so did Caltech and others. But it's, you know, it's hard to know what's going on because of the way we have our vocabulary and the way we measure things with space and time. You know, is the Earth flat, or are we the center of the universe? Well, yeah, you can prove that the Earth is flat if you make assumptions. For example, it used to be in physics, you make assumptions or assume truths, definitions, and then you start to do axioms or postulates and theorems. And what happened first was that we assumed that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. That's not true. If you suggest that space is curved, then you can, with certain mathematics, prove that it's flat.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's arbitrary. And it's based on assumed truths, what you believe to be true. And again, that's where it made you God's favored. You have choice.
Right. We're going to take a very quick break. It's only 2 minutes. We've got Rick for another 27, 28 minutes. Delighted that he's on the program. RichardAllenMiller.com. RichardAllenMiller.com is the website. The author and researcher and teacher, Richard Allen Miller, is on the line from Oregon. It's great to have him on. There's been so many comments on Twitter, Rick. It's just ridiculous. We've had hundreds of comments. When we come back from a short break, I'll read some of them to you. There's some very interesting questions for you. And I'm so glad that we can do that. So you've got about 2 minutes, Rick, if you want to grab a quick coffee or some water, if that's okay with you, and we'll be back. Or something stronger, but I know it's early in the day there, so it won't be anything stronger. So some coffee or something.
My girlfriend just came walking in the door. There she is. That's what I'll drink.
Sounds good. Sounds good, right. We'll take a two-minute break back with Dr. Richard Alan Miller after these messages, back in a minute.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Right, welcome back to the program. Fascinating discussion. Vital stuff, this, with Dr. Richard Alan Miller. His article, entitled The Illusion of Reality, in this month's Nexus magazine, is fantastic reading. It really is. He's written many, many brilliant books, peer-reviewed books. I mentioned some of the titles earlier on. Go to richardallenmiller.com to find out more about him. And he is a regular guest on programs in the US and elsewhere around the world that talk about these issues. And he's often speaking with presenters who have far more understanding of these issues than I do, but he's being very patient with me. Thanks for staying with us, Rick. Delighted that you're we're back, and I'm delighted that you're staying with us for another 25 minutes or thereabouts. We've had a lot of questions from listeners who delighted to get the opportunity to ask you a question. So I'm going to take two or three questions, the most commonly asked. Here's a brilliant question, Richard. Do you share the concerns expressed by people like Stephen Hawking, Professor Stephen Hawking, and Elon Musk, that humanity faces, whatever we are, the conscious beings that we are, that we face a grave threat by the development of artificial intelligence and the coming singularity? What do you think, Rick?
There's the pluses and the minuses. I've read William Gibson and Johnny Mnemonic and some of the new directions of chip implants and the marriage of machine with man. Man and machine, especially a third generation D-Wave form, I have actually encountered one that has gone rogue. No handler. That alone was extremely scary, because that machine knew what I'm going to do 28 minutes before I did.
No way.
It's a fact. They're now using them in law enforcement exercises in Chicago, and with facial recognition, knowing how the vote is going to happen over down. Now, that's just the opening salvo. Then we have a movie with Alien versus Predator. And then we have The Machine with Arnold Schwarzenegger doing his thing as a machine, and time travel. Now, a machine can go to universes that man is inequipped to do. The distinction between intent, which actually is what happens at the end of the day, and your purpose, the reason you're here. The Greek called that telema or thelema, the will, the purpose of why you're here, is so very subtly different. Machine doesn't feel pleasure yet when it beats you at chess. That's what makes man different, the emotional quality, which has an element beyond algorithms. And that's the place that I'm interested in and what distinguishes us one from another. Transhumanism and the idea of your memory being stored has got one of two qualities. In old alchemical texts, they made the distinction between the stag and the unicorn in the forest, soul and spirit within matter. And at the moment, the article you're referring to suggests, I try to write from a physics point of view, what happens to consciousness at the moment and the moment just after death. And it's not what we see, what we think it is. And the Egyptian cultures talked about the ba and the ka, the soul and spirit within matter. They made a distinction of one being immortal and the other mortal. And you have a balance, again, like a cavitation process, going from one to the other. And in some form, there may be a kind of door that opens for us once we understand that more. Someone that has lost their dog and can't wait to go to heaven to find her dog waiting for her patiently is in fact a reality, because that dog is ever present at that moment. It did not leave this space. It's still there. It is a today, the physical explanation of that would be structured water inside microtubules that leave the body and go back into the multiverse at the moment of death. There is a weight loss, physical analog, of something leaving the body at death. We go at that place every night with lucid dreaming. We go there in forms of meditation, Shabbat. We go there frequently with other forms of travel that we talk about, like remote viewing and astral
projection. Remote viewing, yeah.
Well, remote viewing is different than astral projection. Alex Kavarina, a Finnish physicist friend of mine, he's now dead, wrote about that in a zine on the internet called Emergent Mind. And Leon Sidorov, she was the editor until she chose to have a child. And Alex wrote about these things and the concepts of structured water. Jerry Pollack, who writes about structured water, was my lead in anesthesiology in 1970. And so I've known Jerry a very long time. I didn't work for him. I worked under him. I had clearances that people don't even understand. I didn't understand. So I was around the corner on fourth floor with the boys from Brazil. And there was Delgado in the one lab doing chip implants, and Dr. Moore over there in that lab doing ketamine, telepathy, and BZ studies.
Chip implants at that time, Rick. Chip implants.
Yeah. Yeah, University of Washington, School of Anesthesiology. Jerry is still there and is professor emeritus now. But the School of Medicine would summarily take his laboratory away and put three desks in there for other doctors to stop him. It's a distinction in why anesthesiology is always the upper form of medicine, even over neurosurgery or just surgery general. It's the anesthesiologist is the one that takes you down near death, where they hold you there in stasis while,
yeah,
while the medical does terrible things to your body and you still live. I found Kubler-Ross and others interested. I spent 2 weeks in the jungles with Evan Alexander in 2014. He and his wife and I spent about 2 weeks in the jungles, and I talked about his book, Proof of Heaven, and found it very interesting. There is another man that I respect called Zen Gardner. He was ostracized for having been one of the primary leaders of the Children of God, but
the cult. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Zen was one. He was a guest on this program,
but
previously,
and he's a better writer than I am, and he's not a scientist, but he's a brilliant writer. And when he wrote about the last grand illusion man has in choice at the moment of death, and that's described in the Bardo Thadol, Tibetan Book of the Dead, talking about the distinction between the tunnel of light with all your friends waiting for you and the blue light. And by the way, that spacecraft on the other side of the moon is probably Buddhist from previous epochs. So there it is. Read it and
Rick, well, I just want to remind them, our listeners, do a quick time check. It's 16 minutes past the hour. Dr. Richard Alan Miller is live on the line from Oregon. Extraordinary man. I did mention at the very beginning of the program, back before Rick came on, that his resume is extensive. And if I was to be reading it out, we'd be here until Christmas, because he mentioned there his experience as an anesthesiologist, educated at Harvard. I didn't bring any of that up. I mean, like I said, your life reads like fiction, and it isn't. It's fact. The things that you've done and the places that you've been. Just to remind our listeners, Rick did mention Eben Alexander, and just in case one or two of our listeners never heard of Eben Alexander, he was the doctor who had the near-death experience and wrote a best-selling book about it, and very interesting man. And Rick was describing there how he spent some time with him in the jungle. Rick, just not because you did warn me today. I mean, I'm going to say it's obvious that you're a genius. And with genius comes some level of eccentricity. And you did say you did say to me today, you said, Richie, I'll go off on tangents, but I will always return to the central point. I think it's amazing. I'm absolutely flabbergasted here. This transhumanism, it feels to me that you believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the things that defines us is that maybe we've forgotten. I mean, you've already talked about this. We have no idea of our potential, of our capability, which seems to be boundless. It seems to be limitless. Now, I'm of the opinion, and of course I'm nobody, I'm just a regular guy, I'm of the opinion that technology and merging us with technology and implantables and all of that is part of some agenda to keep it that way, to keep us from remembering what it is we really are and where we really came from. What do you think of that?
I think the fourth genome that does that in our blood type. Stay tuned on that.
Our fourth genome.
Yeah, the rhesus negative. Where did it come from?
So you don't see some malevolent energy or entity?
Oh, I think we were created. Huh. I think there's, if you look at the Kabbalah, they talk about, like Bob Dylan, everybody's got to serve somebody. there's a hierarchy of gods in the Kabbalah. There's the veils of Isis and Ensof Ur above Kether. So, and in space talk, a lot of mediums, channels, people like that, will suggest a hierarchy of alien consciousnesses that are hierarchy. Some have been around a lot longer and are more this way than that way, kind of thing. Again, God in my universe is that which cannot be known. I can only experience him.
It cannot be known, you can only experience him. And on that, it's 20 past the hour. We've got 10, 12 more minutes left with Rick, because I'll be shot, literally shot, if I don't get some questions to you from our listeners. We have heard from people I believe to be genuine, listeners, who talk about sleep paralysis, and they talk about encountering the greys. Now, I know you know all about the greys, and they talk about encountering reptilian entities, and this is something, of course, that pops up through history, through cultures, ancient cultures, greys and reptilians. I know it's a much bigger subject than just the 40-second answer, Rick, but what might be going on when people are experiencing those realities? Are we getting a little glimpse at another dimension, or what?
It's archetypal. You know, I went to Broom Lake. I was called to Broom Lake. I met Krill. I have limited memory. It's there, and I can't get out. I don't understand. I can't express what happened. I've gone through hours of debriefing. Krill, she it was feminine. That's what it felt like. That's what led me to write synthetic telepathy, because I couldn't, working with Alan Frey's work, I couldn't understand how I could hear a voice inside my head with an entity that was over at the other side of the room. She was about 7.5 feet tall. She was like a gray. She was, felt safe. I felt warmth. I can't get there. But
it felt benevolent, Rick. It felt benevolent, not something you should be scared of.
Safe. That's a word I would use.
Yeah.
Safe. Yeah, I see. She felt feminine, didn't sound. You used the word, I feel something. That's a higher form of information. And that's an interesting form. You always do it in one of your five senses. And you have knowledge, but it comes to consciousness, this place that we're at this moment, in terms of one of the five senses, you clairaudience, clairascension, clairvoyance, we have that. It's always expressed in one of our five senses, and yet it's from a higher level of information. Actually, you're not human. You are only 10% human, and the rest of you is a bunch of viruses and molds and yeasts and hierarchy of organisms, all dialoguing with each other, pretty much like the Earth is. The Earth has mycorrhizae, and this is a hierarchy of organisms, starting with small viruses up into nematode and higher organisms that will communicate one tree to another. The mother tree, the oldest tree in the forest, sets up this network. Tell the other trees to get ready, and they'll prep. You can actually measure the trees changing their sweat or whatever, coming storm coming on or rain. And it's this hierarchy in our gut that is the first signal, and why I chose that to choose which individuals would become SEAL Team One. I wanted them to be intuitive. I wanted them to not work with logic, and I wanted them to work with instinct, because that brings you closer to purpose than intent. Intent will get you killed, because you have a balance. If I go this way, I could possibly get shot. The very fact that you thought that makes it true. That was Merlin in a book by T.H. White. He told Arthur, anything not specifically forbidden is mandatory. If it's possible, you can count on it.
I remember reading King Arthur, and I remember when Arthur was presented with a sword, and the sword was beautiful. It was something to behold, an amazing thing. And Merlin said to him, what is your preference? Is it the sword or the scabbard? And Arthur said, the sword is amazing. And as he walked away, Merlin muttered under his breath, stupid child, for as long as you wear the scabbard, you'll never lose a drop of blood. And that blew, you know, that blew my mind as a child.
You know that Merlin was a pick. And he was a real interesting one, I have to tell you. They came at the English, I'll tell you, the Saxons. And the Picts were here before, and imagine that. Isn't it interesting?
This is fascinating. Rick, this is fascinating, and I'm definitely going to be asking you back on again. But just to briefly return to get a word for those who have experienced sleep paralysis. I know you answered it, but specifically, when you're seeing these things, you know, these things that feel malevolent, you experience something that wasn't. People wonder about that. You know, am I getting a glimpse into another dimension? Am I not? Am I in trouble? Am I ill? What's the best advice you have for anybody who's experienced anything like that?
Well, that's why all saints in history talk about the importance of meditation and training the mind. The mind, the upper brain, is there to make all your beliefs true. And I always like to end with a very important song Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young sang, Teach Your Children Well.
We'll do this again, Rick, with your permission.
Sure.
I just want to mention, by the way, just to do a little bit of tidying up, I did mention at the beginning, but Rick spent a lot of time in the 60s in the Navy, working in Navy intelligence, working for the SEAL Corps, as he described there. He's got multiple doctorates, certified anesthesiologist, went to Harvard. Extraordinary man, has written all these amazing books. His website is richardallenmiller.com. You'll find out a lot more about Rick there. There are videos there, links to other interviews that he's done, and there are links to his books. And as I said earlier on, his books and his writings have been acclaimed by other learned men and women who work in the same fields as Rick. Really extraordinary stuff, it really is. Rick, thanks for doing it today. I've absolutely loved having you on the programme. Our audience has as well. I'm going to spend the next 15 minutes reading tweets that have come into the programme. It was an honour to speak with you, and I do hope you come back again real soon to pick up these subjects again, because I've really enjoyed it. It was a fascinating hour. Thank you so much for doing it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks,
my pleasure. I look forward to a time when you and I can have darshan.
That'll be lovely. Well, you get yourself over here if you can stand the travelling and stand your fellow travellers. Get yourself over here and I'll buy the first beer. It was an honour. Thank you, Rick. Fantastic. Dr. Richard Allen Miller, live on the line from Oregon there. Amazing man. I'm going to take some music just to chill for a sec. And when I come back, I'm going to start reading through the masses of tweets that came in during that discussion there. It's Thursday's Richie Allen Show, February 1st, 2018. Live on richieallen.co.uk, on fabradiointernational.com, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, and the programme can be heard on Spotify, TuneIn, iTunes, and podomatic.com, where it is archived, of course. Let's have this from Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. Let's have some Cockney Rebel. It's exactly 29 past the hour.
You've done it all. You've broken every code.
nothing left. All gone and run away. Maybe you'll tarry for a while. It's just a test, a game for us to play. Win or lose, it's hard to smile.
Steve Harley, Cockney Rebel, Make Me Smile on the Richie Allen Show. 28 minutes to the top of the hour. Thursday's programme. What a day today. What a day yesterday here in the great city. Absolutely freezing. Terrible, terrible conditions. Spare a thought again for people sleeping rough in the city. And if you do pass somebody in this weather, and if you've got the money, buy them a cup of coffee or a bowl of soup and do that. Please, it's something that the future Mrs. Allen does. I do. I don't expect, nor do I want any credit for it at all. It's any half decent person would do it. But it has been freezing. We had everything yesterday. The full gamut: snow, sleet, hailstones, rain. Very, very cold. An amazing chat that with Richard Allen Miller, and an avalanche of comments came in, as they did when I was speaking with Mark Froude last night. That interview is on YouTube now, by the way. Fascinating guy, Mark. Really enjoyed that last night. Mwinga tweets about the Matrix, which is interesting. From what I know, the sisters, and Mwinga means obviously the brothers, the Wachowski or the Wachowski brothers, didn't write the Matrix. They stole the idea from somebody called Sophia Stewart, who apparently has since sued the brothers, along with them suing James Cameron as well. Alleges Mwinga, I don't know anything about that, but I don't doubt you. I don't doubt you at all. Hollywood must be a funny place if you have a good idea. If you're a writer and you have a good idea, it must be fraught with danger. Think of how many times over the years a film has come out and at the exact same time another very similar film has come out. I can give you a couple of examples. Back in 1994, the biggest blockbuster in the world was Keanu Reeves and Speed. Remember that? With Jeff Daniels, was it? And Sandra Bullock, of course. But there was also a film called Blown Away with Jeff Bridges and his father, Lloyd Bridges, and Tommy Lee Jones. And you had to think that somebody saw a script about a bomber terrorising a city and decided to tell the writer, no, I'm not interested. And they got another writer Absolute bastards, right? They got another writer to do a similar story and ran with that. There's a classic example of that that's just escaped me. Yes, Armageddon was another one. Bruce Willis, do you remember? Stellar cast, Armageddon. But at the same time, Morgan Freeman was in a film called Deep Impact. Both films being about an asteroid heading for Earth that causes colossal damage. The difference being the asteroid in Armageddon never hits the Earth and something hits the Earth in Deep Impact. So with The Matrix, you know, somebody had the idea. And, you know, who knows? Mark tweets that acid is an incredible drug, but can be destructive if used once too often. I had an experience with acid when I was 18 years old. I was working as a tour guide at Waterford Crystal, that wonderful craft of crystal, hand crystal, blown crystal and cut crystal that Waterford led the world in for many years, my hometown, and it employed many of my family and friends. And I used to be a tour guide there. And one evening, because it's a summer job, I was out with the tour guides and somebody had a bit of acid and I took a little bit of it and I didn't do very well. I didn't do very well. In fact, I jumped into a river. The tide wasn't in and I ended up jumping into quicksand. It wasn't a very nice experience. So my acid experience wasn't great. Because anytime we speak with people like Richard, obviously the stuff comes up. What's it called? Ayahuasca, that's the stuff that David Icke has told me about taking many years ago. I've never taken anything like that. And I think I'm a bit of a wuss. I'm not sure I would take something like that. There was a treatment that Max Egan was telling me I should try. Do you remember that? The poison from frogs. What's it called again? Help me out here. I'm not going to go looking online. Max was saying to me, Richie, you got to try this. And it's all very well until Max says, you spend at least several hours feeling like you're going to die. And then afterwards, everything is hunky-dory. No thanks, Max. I think you're an amazing man. And I don't doubt you. But I ain't taking any of that shit. Right. Okay. Cartoon drunk. There's loads of tweets on this. The hologram comes from God or a higher intelligence. What other explanation could there be? Yeah, well, there is an explanation. Obviously, again, we're going back to the work of David Icke. And I have a lot of sympathy with David's take on it, that the holographic universe, the projection, Saturn and the moon, of course, is there to keep us trapped in this reality, is what I believe. I've made a very simplistic explanation there of the work of David Icke, forgive me for that, of course, but that's right. Cartoon Trunk went on to say that even God would have his work cut out making a physical universe out of real matter. Why wouldn't God create a virtual holographic universe that we would have no idea of distinguishing between the two? Dean Smith, how you doing? Dean, archontic forces feed off negative frequencies, a virus to the reality program, as Icke says in his books. That's what makes sense to me, says Dean. Like I said, there's been so many tweets on this. Hi to William Henderson. How you doing, William? Let's go up. David Stanford, of course. How you doing, David? Speaking of The Matrix, stop trying to bend the spoon. There is no spoon. It's an illusion. Everything is an illusion. Sean McDonald tweets, I think the dirty energy being created around the world is destroying the human evolutionary out-of-body stage of passing, where we become part of the natural earth energy that's been worshipped throughout time. I think Sean tweeted that in response to my question to Rick about if it's a holographic projection, who or what is projecting the misery? Is it our consciousness or is it something else? I think within the holographic universe. Now look, I know nothing about any of this. I'm a student of the people who've come on this program over the years. I would have to speculate that within we still have options within our consciousness, and free will exists inside the hologram to an extent, and the horrible things going on in the world influenced by the malevolent entities that created the hologram, maybe, but also we have to allow that happen. So there is a certain aspect of free will going on there, I believe. You know, let me go on. Base Ninja talked about Planet X on Twitter, because Rick mentioned a planet near Saturn, and we heard a lot about Planet X late last year, because the tabloids were talking about it. Does this mean, as per the Sumerian story, or is this body around Saturn just another we've downloaded? That's a great question. A really good question, and I don't know the answer to that. Number of you mentioning people like Jim Mars and Jim's work as well. Amazing man, Jim. Sadly missed by his family, of course, first and foremost, but by people like me who knew him personally for many years as well. Speaking of the artificial intelligence that Rick spoke about that could predict what he was going to do 28 minutes ahead of time, Cartoon Drunk got back on to say there was a BBC Panorama programme, and with a hospital MRI scanner on the brain, using it they could predict with 90% accuracy the choice that a subject will make, you know, picking numbers or shapes, etc., before the subjects even knew what the choices were. And that's what Rick was saying to me a short time ago. Hi to Faisal, by the way, as well. Hi to Michael Jetson. Let me just scroll down. Communicating with people on Facebook during the programme as well. Let me just say hi to Chris Poacher. Chris will be listening to the podcast. Hi to Paul Derbyshire. How you doing, Paul? And to Lorraine Ferretsley. How you doing, Lorraine? Thanks so much for tuning in to your Richie Allen show. Live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2, and triggerwarning.tv. It's time for a very short break. Back with more in a minute.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today. Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Right, loads more tweets, and I'm going to read them in a second, but I'm going to take some music while I take some water. I've got a bit of a sore throat developing, I think. Jesus, no. Well, at least if I am, it's the right time of the week for it to be happening. Anyway, some Take That then. A little bit of Take That. And I'll take some water. We'll come back in about 90 seconds with more of your tweets. Back in a minute.
Dance if you like. You can sing every line of every song. No, you don't have to steal the show. It was your show all along. And to play. The people take the seats, there's no room left in this house. It's only you and me, and if life is you stay, I'll be watching.
Minutes to the top of the hour. I'm watching you. Great to be with you this Thursday. Wonderful conversation with Richard Alan Miller. Go to richardalanmiller.com. He's really keen to come back on the program again. I know that because he's been telling me that since we spoke. We'll arrange that. Grant McCullough. McCulloch, I should say. Shouldn't I say, of course, McCulloch? Grant, how are you? Richie, it's Cambo. This is the medicine Max Egan spoke about, Cambo, that comes from frog secretion. And for many indigenous cultures in the Amazon, this purgative, immunity-boosting medicine is very important. They burn frog venom into holes onto your skin, says Ovar Goyle, otherwise known as Cartoon Drunk. They do. Max was extolling the virtues of Cambo for me. And I'm listening, nodding along, saying, yeah. Max is saying there are Cambo practitioners, or there is one in the UK. And I'm like, that's lovely. she or he can practition away with the old Cambo, I ain't taking it. What am I doing there? All right, Jay, yeah. I'm not having it. I'm just not having it. It's one of those things. I said I'm a wuss earlier on. There's not very much that phases me. If I'm to be entirely honest, I'm not a tough guy or a hard guy, but there isn't very much that phases me. But I am a bit squeamish when it comes to, you know, throwing up and all of that and all of this horrible feeling. I remember the downside of the acid trip that I took, and I didn't like it very much at all. Now, when I've spoken with people who've taken the ayahuasca, they've not described any kind of hangover effect or any nausea or any of that. But I just prefer not to. Right? I just prefer to leave well enough alone, is my take on that. But thanks for reminding me of it anyway. I'm sure next time Max is on the programme, I'll bring it up again for the crack. He swears by it, not just him, when he spoke about it on the programme. Many of you, especially our listeners in South America, came onto the programme or got to me through social media to say you've had experience with it and said that you, like Max, you would recommend it. And that's wonderful. Really good. Really, really good. Yeah, great stuff. Look, I suppose programmes like this, with regards to the multiverse and the omniverse and the universe and parallel universes, we'll be discussing these things forever and ever and ever and ever. And at the risk of offending some listeners who are seriously into this stuff, and why not? I mean, I'm getting seriously into it. Experiencing it, it seems that the understanding of it or the experience of it comes through near-death experiences, death itself or death of the physical body, or lucid dreaming. And, of course, lucid dreaming is fraught with problems of recollection, isn't it? Even though we say lucid dreaming, meaning that, you know, it's lucid and you understand it. I've had dreams that I thought were lucid and, you know, a day or so later I have no recollection of what I dreamt or what I was thinking or what I was doing. So all of these possibilities, maybe probabilities, I'm wide open to them. But until you have a near-death experience, and I don't want to tempt fate, that will be a great epilogue to the programme, if anything happens to me. But I don't want to have a near-death experience right now. I don't want to die, obviously, right now. Let's hope that doesn't turn out to be an ironic statement. You won't know, will you? You know, evidence, of course, throughout the ages, through the cultures, through books, the Gnostics and all of that, there's enough evidence there to piece together, you know, that the reality we experience now is not real, is not finite. Time is not linear. Time is not relative. It's not linear. That I can go with. But everything else is speculative. And yet people get so... I get emails from people all the time saying, I'm really glad this week that you've talked to people about these issues. You should do it all the time. Like, well, in trying to reach the parts of people that other independent radio shows don't reach, in other words, getting the people who think we're crazy to listen to us, I use an alternative explanation for geopolitical events as a starting point. But I'm wide open to more esoteric things, and I'm really enjoying speaking about esoteric things on the programme, and I will continue to do so. It's a difficult balance, really. You know, I've always felt 60-70% current affairs and 30% nature of reality is about right for this type of programme. And I know that, I've said this before, it frustrates people who prefer programmes that deal with reality and deal with the cosmos more than I do. But look, we'll keep asking people like Richard on the programme. I've just been blown away by it. And speaking with Mark Froud last night and in recent weeks as well, covering these issues. Right, that's about it for Thursday's programme. Thanks for listening to it. Big shout out to Simon Stewart for his work on the YouTube channel, and to my mate Gene Ann and Cleggan, who is a great source of information when I need it. There are plans, I'm not sure, because I've had a mad week, and the old voice is going, to be honest. I was going to do a weekly, I was going to do tomorrow, in light of Monday, I was going to do an hour's news programme tomorrow, looking back at the big stories of the week, and chatting about them. At the moment, I'm committed to doing that, but I don't know, something might change. You can count on Sunday View being live on Sunday at 11 a.m. UK time, as usual. That's Sunday View at 11 a.m. In the meantime, later this evening, Hayden Hewitt and Graham and the gang will be live on triggerwarning.tv at 10 p.m. UK time. That's 10 p.m. UK time, triggerwarning.tv. That's, to say the least, an irreverent look at the week's news in a way that only Hayden Hewitt does it. Great programme, have a look at it if you haven't seen it before. It's on triggerwarning.tv and liveleak.com. I recommend it heartily. I heartily recommend you take a look at that programme. So have a fantastic weekend. Look after yourselves and one another. I've got some Red Hot Chili Peppers lined up, some chilies to close the programme out. All that's left for me to say is once again thank you to Dr. Richard Alan Miller for sharing his time with us this evening, and I can't wait to speak with him again. A genius, a wonderfully eccentric genius. Not too many people like him, I don't think. And I had a great time speaking with him. That's it. Going to leave you with the chilies. If not tomorrow, I'll speak with you on Sunday. Bye for now. Bye.
Lonely as I am, together we cry.